So, first off, have you been invited to join the papal conclave?
Yeah, I just got the email.
Oh, you did? Yeah. They're sending emails still.
Yeah, yeah. It went out. It looked like a pretty large group email.
Did it have any advisories on it this time about like no one with a uterus allowed? Like, are they making precautions this time based on the last papal conclave?
Well, what was interesting about it is that I think they mistook me for, they're letting conservative Jews be be part of the conclave. So they're kind of opening up a little bit, but not.
Yeah, they got to do that. The numbers are dwindling.
Yeah, no liberal Jews, but they're all good with. You know, I think that you know, the copy list wasn't hidden.
Yeah,
Steven Seagal. was on
He's
there.
He's got good ideas for this.
Yeah, what were some other ones? Jeff Ross.
Jeff Ross. Yeah. Oh well, yeah, of course.
He's not conservative, but he is on the, you know, straddles both worlds.
He's the Roastmaster General, so that they need somebody to, you know, keep the proceedings moving along. It's going to be a long couple of weeks.
I'd like Jeff to be Pope. I think it's high time a Jew is Pope.
Yeah, why not? At all kinds. This is now the third Pope that I've been working with you as the transition has happened.
So
and
many popes.
I was reminded that we were working together on Air America when they were picking the successor to John Paul II, which wound up being
the Polish
Benedict.
Pope?
Yeah, the Polish Pope was JP II.
Yeah.
Then it was the German guy who might have been a Nazi.
Right, right. Yeah.
Ratzinger.
Yeah.
And he was Benedict the 16th, I think. And then that's the weird one where he just like went away. Like he just decided like, nah, not going to be Pope anymore. And then
what happened to that
left.
Guy? Did he die?
He died at like well after he stopped being Pope. It was a weird one.
Yeah. Well, I guess something was about to surface.
I guess. Yeah. That's what everybody always.
What was that
figured.
Great joke that Leno had years ago for, remember Kurt Waldheim when he got, what was he? He got nominated for something. There were these pictures of him in uniform and it was, The thought was that he was a Nazi, and Leno used to do this bit like, no, that was the bowling club. We're in a bowling club.
Yeah, that was probably when he was being named to be the Secretary General of the UN,
yeah,
I would guess.
I think that was it, yeah.
Well, I did, it called to mind in my memory that when we were working at Air America, we did a bit about the selection of the new Pope, which frankly, I don't think it was as ridiculous as the movie Conclave.
Would have been a shorter movie.
Yeah, it would have been shorter and probably a little more reality grounded, frankly.
The thing I hated about that movie was the goddamn procedural music. Gunk, 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 whatever. They literally had, you know, cutaway procedural music.
My absolute favorite part of Conclave is he's, you know, Conclave has a buddy who goes around to like his assistant who's like, you know, trying to clean up all the messes, you know, and he comes up to Conclave at one point and he's like, hey, I found out about this secret clinic in Geneva that this guy went to. And he's like, oh, yeah, what'd you find out? And he's like, well, he canceled that trip, so we don't need to worry about it. I'm like, oh, really? You just leave that hanging there, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, don't need to know anymore about the secret clinic in Geneva.
Oh, yeah. The Pope has a vagina and a cock. One of each.
It's going to be a lot for them to top that.
Yeah.
We might have played this before when we did the, and in fact, I'm certain we played it before when we did our look back at Morning's Edition, but I know not everybody's heard it. And if you have heard it, it's very quick. So I'm going to play again our segment from back in 2005 when the new Pope was selected. This was our take on it on the air.
We have a new Pope, Pope Benedict the 16th, formerly Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger. Now, we actually, Cardinal Milfington had a friend who was actually in the Vatican, which was, of course, one of the oldest mega churches. And he was there and he witnessed the process by which they picked the Pope and was actually able to record some of it. And we got this mini disc this morning, and it's pretty powerful. And let's hear that. Can we, Kayla?
Gentlemen, if I may have your attention, please. P as in the Paul, 6. P, 6. No. Next. O, 15. Oh, you know, I like the Old Testament, 15. O, 15. Ah, here she come, the next ping pong ball. E as in Ecclesiastes, 8. Yeah,
hey, I got a Pope here. Everybody, I'm in a new Pope.
Okay, bring up your card, Giuseppe. Let me check your numbers. Yeah, she's looking good. Oh, we got a new Pope. Somebody crank up the white smoke.
A lot of people didn't realize that they are forced to speak in Chico Marx-like Italian accents.
Bensonhurst, Brooklyn Italian accents.
Sure,
in a couple
yeah.
of cases.
Uh-huh, yeah, and even the Ratzinger, who's German, they're all forced to speak like that. Because you would think that, you know, he says, I'm the new Pope. You would think it'd be more of a German, you know, whatever that, you know.
He speaks 10 languages, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. Except, so this might have been one of the 10, which was, you know, Italian-American accent.
That was exactly the kind of thing we could do. Like if we came in the morning, we were like, hey, I have an idea. Let's do Pope Bingo and just make that in the like so brief funny. Period of time before we got on the air.
I assume we couldn't find the sound of a rolling bingo cage.
No, it was very, very. In fact, I don't know if you recognize your own voice. You're one of the grumbling cardinals in there. You're the one that went, ah, Jesus. and yes, that was Dan Pashman doing the terrible accented lead cardinal running the conclave.
It's weird. I have a hard time remembering any of that.
No, I wouldn't remember it if I didn't have the actual evidence because it was all such a haze.
Oh my
like,
God!
Like we literally made that at 5 a.m.
I know. It's crazy how little I remember from that time.
Yeah. Well, now we're going on 20 years, so you can be forgiven.
It's like waking consciousness. It's like having a job at like 6 hours a day while you're not sure if you're awake or not.
Well, one thing that I did want to bring up because you mentioned it on the was mentioned on the show Monday in your talk with Lisa Traeger was and this was something this is a little behind the scenes thing because you and I kind of went through a little thought process on it was. You and Lisa kind of taking digs at Mike Birbiglia, who we had just last week, and the audience doesn't know this, we were just in the process of rebooking him.
For like the 9th time.
He has been on, I think this would be the fourth time. Yeah.
And he hosted an anniversary show.
That was it. He did his own episode. Then the 200th episode was Mike interviewing you. And asking questions from past guests of you.
Yeah.
And then we had him back on, I believe it was when he did the movie that of Sleepwalk With Me that you were in.
Oh, really? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we had him back on for a short one for that. But so he reached out to you, told you that he had a special coming up. And I don't know if that coincided with what Lisa was talking about?
No, because it was at the Cellar because, and I think she said that, because I was there and Mike was there. It was that night that I was there and I talked to Louis and Chris Rock and Santino was there and Bobby Lee. But when I got there, Mike was there. Hmm. And I guess when he left, I said something and that got back to Lisa, who was on that show later, I think.
Oh, I see. Same show.
Yeah, I mean, it was that night. Yeah. It must have been that night.
Well, I found that in trying to, you know, put the show together, I found that, you know, we would, it was kind of like a little dicey in the sense that we're going to have him on, right? Yeah. He's being booked to come on.
Yeah.
And I felt like, well, it would be really shitty for him to like hear this secondhand or third hand or just listening to the show himself and get like, you know, surprised by it that Yeah. You and Lise are talking about him that
way. Well, it was one of those things where it's like, we don't really do that stuff. So the question was, you know, what's the point of leaving it in? And oddly, it is one of the things that all of our guests, if there's ever a request to cut something out, it's always like 99% of the time they said something about somebody else. And it's just, it's just not worth the outside of, you know, feeling bad, you know, that Michael have to wake up to that. It just starts shit, and usually unnecessarily.
Right. And the thing that was tricky with that is, obviously we could cut out whatever we want. However, if I had cut that out, it really would have done a number on the narrative of that episode, because it really connected. Once you guys started talking about that, that was an entry point to talking about like how she does her comedy based on, you know, kind of her wanting it to be her own self and not a character. And it got into her special. And so, you know, we had this text chat about it that it's like, this is a little tricky to cut this out, but it's also like, what do you want to do about it? And you know, it was my recommendation that you just give Mike a heads up. I felt like that would be the right thing to do.
And
to
then
say,
I said, just cut it out.
Yeah, you were like, well, then I'd rather cut it out. Yeah. And I said, I think we'd lose too much. Like, I really do. I think this kind of is a thorny situation. So at this point, I don't know necessarily the next step. What happened from that point?
Well, I was like, well, what am I going to say? You know, because it's not stuff I haven't said, and him and I have hashed it out before. And despite, you know, him wanting to come back on the show, there was a point there where the tension between us was on his side, like just him knowing how I felt, you know, different times during our relationship, and having not wavered from it much if it comes up. He was asked to moderate that thing that me and Lynn did down there in the village, the screening.
Oh, one of the movie theaters?
Yeah, I think Ira ended up doing it. Is that right? But he said
Ira did one, and Josh Radner did one. And
well, yeah, but we went out to Mike because, you know, Lynn liked Mike, and Mike said, well, I don't think Mark likes me. And I'm like, I don't. Well, all right, whatever. But this weird thing that I have with him has been on and off for years.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't remember exactly what I said, but, you know, we decided that you were going to put it in and that I should text him a heads up. And so we put together a text, and to be transparent, I didn't send it out till this morning.
Well, but still, that was what he got. He got the text, and then
I'll show you.
Responded to you?
Right. So I sent the text, which was, hey, just so you hear it from me and not someone else, I was talking with Lisa Traeger on my show, and you came up, and I was honest about how I've perceived you throughout the years. I don't think it will be surprising to you, but I also wanted to be upfront about it. And then I said, more grist for our mill when we talk. And he texted back immediately, can I call you?
So that's what I got from you. I got a text from you being like, great, now Mike wants to talk.
Yeah.
Like, and to me, I'm like, well, okay. But that, to me, like, that's a better talk than him texting you because you didn't give him a heads up, and him being like, hey, can I talk to you? Because what the fuck are you talking about me? Like, out of nowhere, just, you know.
Yeah. So, but the feelings I go through is like, you know, like, when you really have to, like, now I got it, like, you know, he's going to want to, you know, tell me, you know, when's this going to end? What do you know, like, why does this keep going? I don't know if I should do the show, and I got to listen to that, and I got to, you know, take the consequences of just saying that thing. And I was sort of like, maybe, like, we don't have to have him back on the show in my mind, you know. it's just like and then, like, I got out of the gym, and I'm like, just literally out loud, I'm like, just fucking call him. Let's just do this. And I'm like, hey, man. He's like, hey, what's up? What's going on? I'm like, well, he's like, how you doing? I'm like, fine. And it's just a normal conversation. We literally talked like people who, you know, like each other for like 5 or 10 minutes. And then I kind of edged into, you know, what I said. He's like, yeah, you know, it didn't affect me in any way. But if I come back on, we're not going to do that, are we? Like, we're not going to go back through it for, you know, our whole relationship again or whatever, because you've had specials that I liked and I've done two specials. And we ended up talking like a half hour about jokes and, you know, like normal comedy stuff. Like that's the problem with me is I have this thing that's stuck in my craw that I can't really get out, but it's not active, but it becomes active if someone's going to poke at it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just a lucky guess. And my criticism of him was what it always has been. But oddly, you know, he ended the conversation on the phone. He was like, well, this new special, it reminds me a bit of the one you did last from Bleak to Dark. It's about my dad had a stroke and dealing with that. And then he said, I think it's the most myself I've been ever, you know, in a special. I'm like, finally. Great. We could start there. But I told him, I said, look, you can call me out. You can call me a dick and I'll cop to it. And, you know, I am being a dick with this thing and I have been for years, but it doesn't necessarily stop it. But it hasn't really surfaced in a long time, has it? Maybe it hasn't. You've cut it out.
It actually hasn't. I would know if it did. But it's funny. It's that I remember a long time ago being like, you know, it was like there were these incidents. One was like when you were doing your Scorching the Earth special in the same theater that he was doing his show in. And he like invited you to come see his show. And you took offense to that. You were like, he's fucking trying to rub my nose in this.
But you're not characterizing it right. Like, yes, he was in that theater. Like it was, what was that called? The Bleecker Street Theater.
Bleecker Street, yeah, or Barrow Street, wherever it was. Bleecker,
it's a nice
yeah.
space.
Yeah.
In the basement of that theater was this dungeon of a fucking space that had been set up as a kind of black box, you know, workshop theater. But
he was in an official off-Broadway theater and with a show being like produced by Nathan Lane.
I was in the basement.
And you were in the basement of that same theater.
And I had to live with that.
Yeah.
You know, and the guy who was producing mine was kind of nuts. And, you know, I was all fucked up because it wasn't a real show. It was just me, you know, kind of going on about my divorce. And people came and then Time Out wrote about it and I didn't want anyone to see it. And they were like, you know, it doesn't seem like Mark has any distance from this stuff. I'm like, no, I don't. Yeah, well, and you can't even get tickets to it. Why are you writing about it? But just the fact that he was up there, Mr. Likeable, you know, with this big produced show. Yeah, it was resentment. It was just, you know, just straight up kind of like, you know, fuck that guy. Why am I, you know, in the basement in the catacombs?
But the same exact thing of him, like, it's just repeated itself over and over again. Like this recent time where he has sent you a text saying, I did this new special and I think you will really like it. And it's close to stuff you have done. Like, it's the same thing as that of him wanting you to come up and see his special. It's the same as him putting you in his movie, playing a guy who's like, you know, an influential comic to him. Right. And it like always. What's that?
But a dick.
Yes, right. I mean, like, he's not going to give you a, you know, full beatification in these things. Mm. But at the same time, it's always been very clear to me that this guy, you know, wants your approval.
Yeah, it's me misunderstanding that. Like, I read it as like he's rubbing my face and stuff. And at this point, you know, arguably, you know, I'm plenty successful. I'm not going to, you know, try to figure out who's more successful necessarily. But I think it was one of those things that there was something always out of my reach that I still think on some level I see as out of my reach was just really having, you know, a decisive approach and brand and tone that, you know, was, you know, affable and, you know, pleasant, that there was something about he being so put together in his character and him doing one person shows that were, look, they were fine and they are fine in that zone. But, you know, to me, you know, I'm going to go more towards, you know, Spalding Gray or Bogosian, or, you know, it seemed to be gutting the notion of performance art, whatever. There was a lot of things going on in my head, but the main one being, it's like, you know, this guy's got it more together than me. And
also
and,
mixed with, don't forget, mixed with the fact that you can kind of spot someone doing a kind of performative character.
Well, yeah, but that's always been the issue. But like, you know, I can accept that in other people, and arguably we all eventually evolve one. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, every time I watch him, I'm like, he's a great comic. I mean, he knows how to do it and he's funny and, you know, he's a long form comic and I like that. But there's just something about the hidden ambition that always kind of bothered me, because, you know, I don't know that I'm that clear on my ambition. I know that I'm competitive, and I know that, you know, I come from a more desperate place than I should, but I'm just not, I don't see myself as ambitious.
Well, there's a laundry list of people, though, who kind of fall into that category that you've always kind of had an issue with, because
there's a few.
Yeah, like Pete Holmes and Chris Hardwick and going all the way back to the kind of beginning of your career with this, it was Jon Stewart.
Sure.
And the interesting thing I found was today, before you talked to Mike,
yeah,
you were just like, yeah, this just, it's annoying that these things, you know, get compounded over the years. And it's like, winds up being like the Jon Stewart thing. And I was like, that, you saying that to me, I was like, whoa, 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 hang on. This is like the opposite interpersonally. Yeah. Like Stewart was angry at you, you know, and felt resentful toward you because of how you've treated him. Mike is like a puppy.
Yeah.
That's like, why do you keep hitting me? All I want is to rub your leg.
Yeah, but see, I still can't, like, it must be something about my wiring. I still feel like it's a little manipulative, but we had a nice conversation. And
yeah,
like, you know, when I let my guard down, you know, I have there's no problem with that guy.
Right.
And that's what happens when you're like, when he's like, can I call you? I'm like, oh, okay. You know, like, why do I just said a thing. Can't we just not, why, you know? So, but it was fine. It's fine. And it's stupid. And, you know, I try to manage it, but,
well, I do think I do think it was, you know, handled well and, handled in a way where, you know, you guys can do an episode coming up, record an episode, not have it be the thrust of the episode, but also, you know, now it's a little flavor in the mix.
Yeah. But like, it's like, why? You know, we're old now. I'm old, and I'm, you know, and I'm older than all these guys too by almost a decade probably. And you know, like there's some parts of me that don't, that just sort of, they remain there, but they're not connected to anything, you know, that
nothing present. Exactly. Right.
And you know, it's just kind of
it's like a vestigial limb,
yeah, exactly,
of resentment.
Yeah. And it just is I don't know, it still feels good to talk shit.
Yeah, well, I do think that was a kind of good thematic moment in that interview with Lisa Traeger, because, you know, she was saying, this is what we just like to do as comics. It's like one of, and you both talked about, like, yeah, it's gotten me in trouble. And like, you know, in the meantime, you had this moment, you know, the first 10 minutes of the episode where you guys did that about some other guy, right? Like, it was like this good representation of the example of doing that, and then your discussion of like the repercussions of that throughout both of your careers.
Yeah, but also, like, you know, it becomes tricky. You know, this is just an ego thing, you know, and it's just you know, a personal issue. But mm-hmm. like, you know, sometimes talking shit, like in the case with Adam Sandler, I thought that, you know, he was fair game.
Yeah, right, you know, right,
that
right.
There are people in our business that become cultural touchstones or points or whatever the expression is, or cultural right. Have cultural impact, whereas somebody who makes jokes about culture, they should be fair game. But when it comes right down to it, they're still that guy you see at the comedy club.
But frankly, I would say, so this was, you were on Conan, right? And you said something about Adam Sandler fans, right?
Yeah,
and,
it was a joke, and, yeah.
Yeah, and then he confronted you about it, saying, you know, I heard you were talking about me, and you said, yeah, on television.
Yeah, I was on Conan.
and I would say that is how I feel like Lisa's position is in this thing with Birbiglia. Like, she's absolutely within her rights to say, oh, I don't like that guy for how, like, her criticism of him was his stage persona.
Yeah.
She's like, I don't like this guy, grown up guy talking like a baby doofus.
Yeah.
Like, you know, be a real guy, be yourself.
Said, you fuck your wife.
Right. But like, anybody could say that. That's criticizing. That's criticism of his persona.
Yeah, it's all people do. It's not just comics. Everybody talks shit.
That's right. That's exactly right.
There's a whole industry based on it.
But because it's a comic doing it about a comic,
right.
It winds up seeming personal.
Or player hating or jealousy. Yeah. It's like my criticism of the anti-woke guys. I mean, you know, that tribalized, that definitely put me on the outside of that thing. And I know all those guys. But, you know, that is of utmost political importance and cultural importance that somebody do that. Because that's why you have a bunch of, not necessarily political comics, but certainly left-leaning people in my business who are afraid. You know, just mm-hmm. Everyone's afraid of Trump, of Rogan, of whatever, but somebody's got to just, you know, throw, and it's not even, like, it's weird. Last night I had a moment where, you know, along these lines in terms of, you know, what we do, that, you know, like my policy, and I think rightfully so, and our approach to this is that we do our show, this is how we do it. There is some insulation because we are audio and we're not easily clipped. And if somebody wants to reference something I say, they have to put it in print. And that's, you know, not really the currency of the time. Mm-hmm. And it protects me a little bit from, you know, troll pile-ons and being dragged into a larger cultural conversation, you know. Mm-hmm. But I still say my piece, but, you know, there is part of me that wishes it would even land harder. And I had this thought last night, it is off topic, but I was like, you know, God damn it. Are we, you know, after I read that article I sent you from the Hollywood Reporter, I'm like,
oh yeah,
are Rendon and I doing the right thing? Should we produce some video pieces that I know will fucking crawl up the ass of these people because it's our duty? Not, you know, look, we run our own shop, we make a good living and we're okay with that. But there's part of me, there's a higher calling for me to trash these guys on video. And maybe I'll just ask Brendan if we should just, you know, script like 5 or 6 pieces that I can go to a studio of a peer and put on a video for my platform guys to put up just so we're on record. Are you in?
The hilarious thing about that, though, is like, I can't think of a thing that you would hate more than the repercussions of that.
Yeah, I know. I know that's always part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's like,
it's like 100,000 Mike Birbiglias I got to call. It's just going to be going like, oh, God damn it.
That's just your, that's the rest of your life every day. Oh, God, they got to do that thing now.
Why they put that out there? It's never going to stop.
Yeah.
But isn't that cowardice?
Wait, no, cowardice is cowardice would be if you did that, if that was a thing you do, right? If you have a show where you're, you know, supposed to call people on the carpet for the things, like if you were John Oliver, right? And you all of a sudden stop talking about Trump because you're afraid what Trump's going to do to you. That's cowardice. Then that's why John Oliver doesn't do it. He's not a coward.
Yeah.
He's not a guy who's going to be like, well, I'll shut up then if this guy's going to threaten me.
Yeah.
But like, you have never establish that you're some guy who your job is to police comedy. That's just not, it's not your job.
Yeah.
But you definitely can speak your mind, and every fucking intro that you do is laden with your opinions vis-a-vis other comics and how they conduct themselves.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that you, by not being like, I'm going to do a takedown of them every day, you're being a coward.
Well, I guess I didn't see it as a takedown. I think I, you know, that because from the side I'm on, you know, and the appreciation I get from comics that, you know, don't have a platform big enough or don't have the balls to do it, it's just not being done. And in my mind, these lines, these dividing lines are very real. And a lot of them don't want to, you know, a lot of them can't see past the opportunities offered to them by being diplomatic with these comics that have this power, you know, which I don't really have. So sometimes I think it's on me to call out collaborators and to broaden the conversation around the impact of people who are, quote unquote, just comedians now, you know? That's what it is. It's not.
But it's like, don't you think you do that?
I definitely
not just
do
on
it.
The podcast, but you've done it in your specials.
Yeah,
you do
sure.
it when you guest on sure, on, sure. on late night shows. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like,
yeah, I guess there's part of me that's sort of like, I'm not like, I guess there's always part of me that thinks like, you know, if I do it, it'll free up the dialogue.
Yeah, well, I think you're just bumping up against the thing that you bumped up with regardless of what it is. It could be with your comedy, your acting, yeah. anything, that when you do it, you're like, shouldn't the whole world see this? Doesn't
right.
everybody get to
sure.
see this and
exactly.
celebrate it?
Turns out, no, not many. Right. No, it's never the whole world. But also just sort of like, because there is that same fear that people in Congress feel, around speaking their minds or being honest about, you know, what's happening, that happens in comedy too. But it's, you know,
sure.
the implications are different. You know, they don't want to fuck opportunities up. They don't want to be targeted by, you know, the army of meatheads. There's a lot of things, I think it would be helpful if more people could, you know, speak their mind about it. But then again, it's not many comics that do that, period, you know, in terms of this type of stuff.
That's funny that we got to all this from Birbiglia, who is definitely not of that
I think what's important is that, you know, the difference between my engagement around this stuff and around speaking my mind, that is part of me, and it is something I do, and it is important. But there is another operative part of me of like, you know, oh man, you know, now I've caused all this trouble for myself. I've caused other people trouble, and you know, now I have to sit with that, or try. You know, I've gotten better at that because you got to do some things that are going to come back at you in the form of. Attacks or trolling or, you know, judgment. And, you know, that's just life. But I'm very aware of the decision making around doing it.
Well, one of the things that I always take to heart, and I remember hearing this from one of Letterman's producers, that Letterman told the producers of the show, your job is to protect me from myself.
Yeah.
And I've always taken that to heart. Like,
yeah.
And I don't mean that from the sense of like, I've got to censor you. I do, obviously do not. Cause like we, you know, have a pretty connected
no,
relationship
it's not
on
censoring.
That front.
It's literally protecting me from myself. It's not censoring, but that's why, like, you know, when I think about doing things, I'm like, got to run this by the brain.
And my thinking is not like, oh, what would I do?
No, I know.
What does this do for him? Right? Like, that's a distinct difference.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sometimes I just picture you when I have to do other appearances, just watching, going like, oh my God, what is it? What's he going to do? I'm not there to.
Oh, just, no, I don't think I've ever, I don't think I've literally, I've never done that. I've never done that. I did, and it's definitely less now. I did have a sense that the horses were out of the stable once the Instagram Live stuff became you know, very prominent.
Yeah,
because there was just no way to have any sense. Like, it would be one thing if you did a show, let's say, like you did. I'm not going to name which one it was, but you did a show recently. You said something on it, and you and I were talking about it. We were not talking about the show that you taped with as a guest.
Yeah.
But we were talking about something else, something that related to that. And you said, I just did a joke. I just talked about that on this show. And then based on the conversation you and I were having, you said, yeah, I think that's probably not a good thing to put out there. So you contacted the person you did the show with. You said, hey, can we cut that part? And they said, sure. And you did.
Yeah.
And it was like, that's the ability that we have as a partnership, that like, I didn't know you said that. But it was just that we have regular conversations.
But it's like, I like that I have this part of myself where I'll say something, I'll be like, oh, I got to come clean on that and talk to Brendan. Like, you know, like,
yeah, but
I know
okay.
it innately.
But then you didn't do that with the IG stuff because you didn't remember. You're just talking, right? So it's not like, so then I'd find out sometimes literally years later, we'd be dealing with something and it's like, oh, it's because you said this thing 2 years ago on Instagram Live.
Yeah, I don't like, I've gotten into a little personal issues with that stuff. And also like, you know, other issues because it was very freeform and yeah. I wasn't thinking in terms of it, not necessarily lasting, but by the looks of the participation, it wasn't like some global hit. You know what I mean? But it was, it existed.
And yeah, all you need is a couple hundred people for that to actually in some way metastasize.
But oddly, like, you know, a lot of it, the only stuff that kind of bit me in the ass was about comics, really.
Yes.
And some people developed, you know, peculiar parasocial relationships with me.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, look, here's the thing. I always say to you, when you and I talk about, not specifically what you brought up before about making a video about the anti-woke guys, but like you've brought up things like this, like that, and been like, you know, well, where can I do this? And I'm always like, you have amazing platforms for yourself that you fully control. You don't have to go on somebody else's show and talk about it because you're out of control. That's not in your control then.
Right.
And the bottom line is, even if you don't feel it has the relevancy, the audience of this podcast, not this bonus one, but the main podcast is as substantial a platform as I would say, you know, 99% of your peers have.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Or could hope to have.
Yeah.
And so like it does, I think, because you just go sit in that room you're in right now and do it and there's nobody else around. I think sometimes you just have no grasp on that. You don't get that.
No,
like,
I never do.
Right. Oh, hundreds of thousands of people just heard me say that actual thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, and I think that our dynamic, you know, works towards, you know, managing that properly. And I, you know, and there are things I've said on here where I literally text you after. I'm like, yeah, you're going to probably cut that thing out. And you're like, I already did. It's already out.
Yeah. There's sometimes there's the like, hey, did this make it in? Nope.
Did not.
I'm glad that this all, even if it was uncomfortable for you, it ended in the right spot.
It was fine. I'm pretty much a softie at heart. And, you know, and I think Mike appreciates that. I think what's happened with that generation of comics is I'm sort of like a guy that, despite what I think, they all kind of understand me. And if they still want to engage with me, it's because, you know, I'm like I am, but they know like how I really am, you know?
Yeah, like, it's like a junkyard dog.
It's like maybe an old character of some kind, like, you know, Cranky Mark or Shit Talking Mark. Because I love doing it. Like, I went out to dinner with Mulaney and Joe Mandy and Dan Levy and Max Silvestri. Yeah, they invite me to those things. And I like to tell stories and I like to talk shit. And you know, I'm a bright person and I like listening to their shit. So. But I have to accept that I'm kind of this old man character to some of them.
Yeah. I also think that's revealing in the sense that you do that. These are, you know, some of those guys, you know, all of those guys are very funny. And here they are like listening to you and you're getting big laughs out of them telling these stories. And
sure.
Like you spend your whole life getting feedback from audiences and here's like a good audience and they think what you're saying is very funny. Why are you going to keep that to yourself then?
Yeah.
Like it's giving your brain permission to like, yeah, I'm going to go do this somewhere else. I'll get other people to laugh.
And also because like, I'm not hungry. I'm not really in the game in the same way. I'm not playing the same game they are.
Yeah.
So I speak with a freedom of mind. It was very funny because like, you know, with that group, and it's always sort of like, you know, how's this going to land, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was talking about Somebody Somewhere. Is that the name of that show?
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. am I going to talk to her?
Yeah.
Oh.
Bridget Everett?
Yeah. Right. So I didn't know anything. I don't know anything. I didn't know anything about her. I didn't watch the show at all, but I watched all the seasons and I'm like, I go like, have you guys, what do you think of this show you know, somebody somewhere. And as I said, I love it, man. He's like, I hate it. Simultaneously, it happened. And Mulaney's like, that was the best. That was perfect. Like, you literally, I'm looking around for someone to, you know, get on board. And right as I say, I love it, he's right next to me and goes, I hate it. And I'm like, oh my God. And then we had to have that conversation. Like, how could you hate that? Because it's not, there's nothing, it's not badly written. It's not, and really what it was that that thing, either it's going to get into your heart or it's not. And if it doesn't connect with your heart, you're it's just going to be boring and terrible.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to respond to that thing emotionally.
Well, you know, yes, that's going to come up soon in a future episode. And really, before the Birbiglia call happened, my intention of getting on the mics with you today was going to be to talk to you right after David Cronenberg left the garage. So I have not heard from you yet about how that talk was. And I know you put a lot of prep into that. You watched a lot of movies and you did a lot of thinking about him.
Well, yeah, I really like... People like him demand that. And, you know, I no matter how much you're like, well, you've seen enough or, you know, whatever, I definitely need it in order to get a full sense of the arc of their output and creativity. I really have to go into it.
Yeah.
And see where we meet and where I meet his work. And it was very interesting because, you know, I had one of those things where, you know, I watched, I think, his new movie, and then I watched some really old stuff, and I just kind of, my brain just kind of started generating, you know, ideas and takes and, you know, where he is, you know, metaphysically, spiritually, around, you know, how he is with, you know, body dismemberment, disembodied bodies. I wrote this whole big page here, you know, manifesting psychic violence, physical violence, harm done by machines, symbiosis with machines, belief versus truth, core truth is decomposition. And I read that, it looks like a math problem. And I, at the bottom, I read this to him. I said, the depth of his secular anti-mysticism is that, you know, he'd rather deal with the meat, the machine, the mutations of desire and pain. And he's like, yeah, okay, that makes sense, you know. And also watching, what I became fascinated with was what work of authors he chose to reckon with, you know. Because I'm a big fan of the movie The Dead Zone, and I've rewatched it several times. And then I haven't seen Naked Lunch in years, but I did see it. But I did watch his Bruce Wagner script. Like, he wrote the script for Naked Lunch, and he also wrote the script for Cosmopolis, which was a DeLillo book. But Bruce Wagner wrote the script for Maps to the Stars, which is a difficult novel, and it's big, and never got through it. But it's a Bruce Wagner script, and I felt like I'd seen the movie, but I don't know if I watched it all the way through. But I watched it all the way through last night, and it's great. It's dark as shit, but, you know, it's Wagner writing Wagner. So, like, you know, this is his conception of the story. And it's kind of amazing, especially if you like Wagner. And the same with Cosmopolis. I talked to him about DeLillo, and Cronenberg had just, he liked the book, and he just wrote some scenes just with DeLillo's language. And after he wrote a bunch of scenes, he's like, I think this is a movie. And it's kind of a great movie. And it made me re-excited about DeLillo, because it's hard to pull off. And then we talked a bit about that, about, you know, working from novels. But we also talked a lot about, you know, we talked about the new movie, The Shrouds, a lot. And we talked about Scanners a bit. We talked about The Brood a bit. We talked about The Fly a bit. We talked about The History of Violence. We talked about the very first movie, Stereo, which he's surprised anybody ever sees. And so it was a pretty, and The Brood, which I watched with Kit, because that's her favorite, Cronenberg. And yeah, so I had a very full sort of sense in my head of places to go with him.
And he was a pleasant guy?
Oh, yeah, he's a nice guy. You know, he's one of those guys that when he stops talking, he stops talking. You know, like, it's not that he's not a conversationalist, but I put stuff out there and he'd say something and I'd notice, like, oh, he's done with that. So I'd have to, you know, keep it going that. Yeah.
Hit the next button. Yeah.
Exactly. It wasn't so much questions, you know, because a lot of times I don't ask questions. I just want them to respond to ideas.
The ideas. Yeah. Yeah.
But it was good.
Well, Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's one of those things where the nice benefit to doing an interview like that for you is that you get to do a little like film school of this person, like a crash course, which obviously you've seen Cronenberg movies through a good portion of your life. It's not new to you, but it's nice. I always find it's nice to get it like a good concentrated hit.
Well, yeah, because it's, you know, you don't reckon with movies all the time. You know, like The Fly, we all know.
Yeah.
Most people, nerds, know Scanners, you know, and Videodrome, which I can't imagine aged well. And there's, you know, quite a few that I've never seen. But watching Cosmopolis and Maps to the Stars was just mind-blowing to me. Because they're you know, Cosmopolis is interesting because he does shoot a certain way. And that was one of the things I talked to him about, that it all seems, you know, early on it was very stark. And then I realized it goes all the way through and it's a decision he makes. So he was able to speak to that a bit, speak to how he works with actors a bit. You know, speak to, you know, these themes that he has, so he doesn't see them as themes. So I kind of reframed it that as an artist that, you know, you're going to, whether they're themes or not, you find yourself in the same zone as time goes on. Maybe not, you know, continuing to understand them.
Yes.
You know, we talked about the nature of resolution not existing. Yeah, it was good. It was good.
Well, good. I'm excited to listen to it. I know you love having directors on, and he's a top one. He's, you know, there's only one David Cronenberg.
That's right. And it's interesting that, you know, in talking about the idea of horror as a genre, and then, you know, I actually, in my sort of frenzy of thinking, you know, I went and looked up the definition of horror. Not as a film genre, but just as a word.
A word, yeah.
And it's kind of telling in a sort of way, you know, because you know, he doesn't like genres. He doesn't like necessarily the idea of body horror. I mean, he knows, you mm-hmm. know, what they're saying, but it's a critical word. But the mm-hmm. word horror is an intense feeling of fear, shock, or disgust. And I'm like, well, you do that.
Can you get on board with that at least?
Yeah, of course.
All right. Yeah. Well, good, man. Good that happened. I look forward to listening to it, and I look forward to your eventual talk once again with Birbiglia.
Yeah, me too. All right, buddy.